Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. What's going on, Negotiations Ninja listeners? Welcome to this throwback episode with my amazing guest, David Premer. We talk all about the amazing things that happen and why people buy. Like, what's the real psychology behind buyer intent? We talk all about the buying experience, how to handle the most common sales objection, and the concept of power dynamics. Really fascinating conversation, as always, with David. Enjoy. David, how are you?
I'm great, Mark. How are you?
I'm stoked to have you here, man. I'm really, really, really happy to talk about you and your book and everything that's going on with Cerebral Selling.
Oh, me too. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. For the listeners who don't know about you and don't know about your book, maybe you could tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is David Premer. And like most people who end up in professional sales careers, I got here by accident, like everyone else did. So I started my career over 20 years ago as a research scientist of all things and got into sales at the turn of the dot-com boom, absolutely fell in love, but started to actually think about sales almost like an engineering problem, right? Like when I said it like this, the customer got it. When I said it like that, they didn't get it. And, you know, all these tactics and feelings and motions and strategies all boil down to how people react. And so I fell in love with sales, spent the next 20 years in sales across four amazing B2B tech startups. Three of those startups ended up getting acquired. One got acquired by Salesforce, where I came over and was running small business sales for the Eastern US. But after all of this time being in sales and falling in love with this profession, you know, to be honest, it kind of bothers me, Mark, that when you when you tell people you're in sales, they kind of think that you're the enemy. And so I don't know if you found that.
Yeah. Well, listen, in large part, I'm responsible for that because I was from procurement.
Procurement's the worst. No, I'm just kidding. You know, no. That's the real enemy. That's the enemy of salespeople is the procurement department. But no, you tell people you're in sales and you automatically become the enemy. But this is such an amazing profession. But what I realized, you know, even for myself, is that, you know, being a VP at Salesforce, people were trying to sell me stuff all the time. And I realized a couple things. Number one, I love to buy stuff, but I actually don't like talking to salespeople. And a lot of the tactics that the salespeople use, even the ones on my team, are not unethical. They're not categorically ineffective, but I just found they weren't working on me. So I started my practice a few years ago focused on teaching kind of the art and science of modern selling from the perspectives of science and empathy in a way that is like high passion, high conviction, high emotion, that helps people really do well executing in this amazing profession in a way that doesn't make them feel gross and makes their customers love them. So that's what I do now at Cerebral Selling.
I love that, man. One of the things that you say in your book is that the buying experience is the product. What does that mean?
So when you think about like, well, why do people buy things, you know, in general? And one of the things, we can talk more about this, but the idea is that people buy things for feelings all the time, right? Like from the clothes you wear, the car you drive, the food that you ordered for lunch, to the technology you buy, even how you negotiate, everything is about emotion and feeling. So when it comes down to like how we sell, the experience is the product. You know, experiences create feelings. And so you could go out to, for example, buy an iPad, and you could buy that at like a big box electronics store, or you could go to the Apple store. It's the same product, rolls off the same assembly line. But if you ask people like, where would they like to buy that product? It's generally, they say, well, I like the Apple store. And you ask them why, and they're like, well, I don't know. It's like, it's cool. It's fun. Like, it's got, you know, like, I like the decor. So what you're describing is like the experience, right? So right. It's not so much the product, and that relates as well to the selling experience. I'll share one interesting kind of quick stat. This was in the 2018 Salesforce State of Sales Report. And they asked salespeople, they said, you know, which of these things have an extreme or substantial impact on your ability to convert customers? And interestingly enough, demonstrating ROI, like a business case, that was 10th on the list. Wow. The number one thing, you want to take a guess? Number one thing on the list?
No.
Listening. Now.
Oh, this is why you're a William Ury fan.
There you go. So like, the power of listening.
Okay, cool.
Why is listening so important, right? Because it creates a feeling and it creates a great experience. And that experience is what people convert based on more than anything else.
Yeah. I think we can totally geek out on William Ury for a second here. So like the cool thing about listening is it also adds the feeling of reciprocity as well, right? Like when you feel like you're being listened to, you feel like you've been given something almost. And so you feel like you need to reciprocate as well.
Absolutely. Well, you know, his talk, he talks about reciprocity, and reciprocity, I'm referring to his TED talk. The reciprocity is huge, not just in, you know, in terms of listening, but of course in all areas of kind of business and life. But yeah, you know, it's when you listen to someone, it makes them more likely that they're going to listen to you, and also helps you understand their position so you can understand where to move them. If I'm going to use a Dan Pink kind of moving term, right? So yeah, listening is very powerful, but back to like the experience as the product, listening is part of the experience. And we've all had the experience of working with a salesperson who didn't listen. And it wasn't that their product was bad or good. It's just that we just didn't like working with them. And when we didn't like working with them, we move away, right? And so it's super important, sales negotiation, to create that amazing experience.
One of the things that I find interesting about your work is you talk about servicing accounts or servicing the relationship beyond the original solution. I think that's where a lot of people fall short, especially when it comes to the buying experience. You know, I want to feel like if I'm an enterprise procurement person, I'm being taken care of. You know, like when I buy something, I want to know that my salesperson that I'm dealing with is checking in with me to see how things are going, which is why I think a lot of tech companies now have built out these customer success teams. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can talk about that for a second and why that's so important.
Let's just put on our buyer and consumer hats for a second. And we don't really care about the inner workings of the companies that we buy products and services from. Like certainly exactly. Sales, like we care because we need to sometimes navigate those organizations, but in general, like we don't care. And so the fact that, and you see this, you know, when I was working at Salesforce, and this is all good, like you have the salesperson, then you have the customer success, and then you have a support person. And you know, when a customer calls up, they just want to know that every person I touch and talk to like knows everything about me. And if you've ever, you know, you call your credit card company, they say, well, I need to transfer you to this department, and you need to like re-authenticate, you need to explain everything again, like that totally sucks. And so this idea of like, try not to subject your customers to the inner workings and all of like the handoffs that occur in your company. You know, the idea is that everyone, especially even on the sales side, should be saying the same thing about what your company does, the value it can add. So having everyone on the same, and this takes a lot of work. I mean, I'm not saying this is an easy thing, but creating that frictionless experience for your customer requires you to have that full view of them, no matter who they touch in the organization, and everyone armed with the same tactics. Otherwise, it creates a very disjointed experience for your customers.
Have you read that book by Roger Dooley called Friction?
I have not.
If you're into frictionless experiences, you got to check this guy out. So he's done a bunch of studies on how reducing friction improves sales. Amazing. I've had him on the show a couple of times, but just an amazing guy. And the research that he's put into this is crazy. If you're listening to this right now, the book is called Friction, the Untapped Force That Can Be Your Most Powerful Advantage by Roger Dooley. Really, really, really good. Anyway, I'm digressing. So let's get back to understanding technology, because there's so many companies right now that are just avoiding technology. And I feel like now that we're sort of in the middle of COVID-19 and maybe getting beyond it, hopefully a little bit, people are and companies are being forced to use technology to accelerate sales. And that's maybe one of the silver linings of this whole crazy thing. How does technology accelerate the sales process and maybe the sales experience with people?
I think there's kind of a couple of big categories. Number one is if you're going to call it like the view of the customer, whether you call it like the stuff in your CRM, or, you know, just all of the information that you know about the customer to make sure that your interactions with them are high value, right? You're not doing unnecessary discovery. You have visibility into all their previous interactions. Like that 360 view of the customer is really important, and technology can help us do that. The other piece is kind of like the analytical, like the tools that help us improve our execution. So anything, I mean, certainly our CRM has information about our sales funnels and things that we can improve and optimize along the way. But then you have like, you know, sales engagement or conversational intelligence platforms like the gong.io's and the outreaches and so on that can give you insights into like how you're actually executing on your calls. For example, one of the things I talk a lot about is objection handling. And there's some really interesting research that says that top salespeople, when they get an objection from a customer, and I'm sure, you know, this is, I say part and parcel in sales and, you know, in negotiation and procurement, when people get an objection, the top sellers will respond with a question more often, about 50 some odd percent of the time, versus the average performers will only respond about 30% of the time with a question. The rest of the time they launch into like a big monologue to handle that objection. Right. It's funny, like you wouldn't necessarily know that that was the case unless you had some kind of technology that was kind of sitting behind the scenes and helping you understand like your behaviors, almost like kind of a virtual coach, because even a great sales leader won't always pick up on these kind of systemic things. Or let's say, for example, you consistently lose deals to a specific competitor or a certain stage of a sales cycle. There's so much nuance in all of this that, you know, sometimes as great as our systems and reporting are, we need some of these tools and technology to kind of pull out these new threads and patterns that we're seeing that often remain hidden. So technology can be tremendous, both on the traditional side of giving you that view of the customer, but also improving your own execution.
Hey folks, we're going to take a short break from this podcast to tell you all about the negotiation training that we offer at Negotiations Ninja. If you're part of a sales team, if you're part of a procurement team, if you're part of a customer service team, really, if you're part of any customer or internal facing organization where communication sometimes fails, we probably have training that's going to help you. If you're trying to figure out how to deal with conflict better, if you're trying to figure out how to get more value out of your negotiations, if you're trying to figure out how to deal with price increases, give me a call. The easiest way to be able to do that is to go straight to our website at negotiations.ninja. That's negotiations.ninja, or reach out to me directly on LinkedIn and let's set up a conversation. Would love to chat with you all about that. Let's get back to the show. Dig into that for a little bit, because I find that, yeah, especially when I'm dealing with really good salespeople, if I have an objection, their main objective is not to overcome the objection, but to understand it so that they can provide a solution for it. And so, like you said, they're asking these really great questions, but so many people, when they hear an objection, it's almost like they become like these deers in headlights, right? Where they just freak out and then they just launch into something to try and explain it away, instead of pausing for a second to try and understand what that's all about. Where do you think that that comes from? Why do the top performers ask questions?
Yeah, well, you know, I think especially in objection handling, we become very desensitized to our own playbooks. And what does that mean? It means that oftentimes we think we get an objection like, it's too expensive. Like, that, let's say that's the number one objection everyone gets. Oh, it's too expensive. We think, oh, okay, well, I have a one-hit crush for that kind of objection. You know, I'm going to give a discount, or I'm going to change the payment terms. And really, like, think about that objection. It's too expensive. I want you, this is actually an exercise I do with my clients. I want you to say, it's too expensive, dot, 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 and come up with as many explanations for why it's too expensive, right? You know, a lot of these objections are actually quite nuanced. And what happens is if you just jump in, you are most likely going to answer the wrong objection, right? You're not going to get down to that root cause, the root intent. And so the best salespeople are the ones that really spend a lot of time exploring that intent. Are you saying it's too expensive because you don't have the money, because you want me to make it cheaper, because your buddy works for a competitive product and you're just going to buy that product anyways? Like, really drilling down so that we focus on the right way of handling that objection.
Interesting. So if I had to say, maybe let's just do a little bit of role playing. If I had to say, hey man, listen, this is great, but it's too expensive, what would you say at that point?
I'm trying to resist the urge to jump in with my best Chris Voss mirroring technique and say, oh.
Yes, I was hoping you would go there. Awesome.
Too expensive? Too expensive, Mark?
Too expensive?
You know, so I love that tactic. But, you know, and I say that's a great shortcut tactic because, you know, it works so well. But sometimes, you know, it can be appropriate, and not all cases, is to give the person a little bit of a menu. You know, hey, look, I totally, you could, so the long form version of the Chris Voss mirroring tactic is, oh, look, I totally understand. You know, everyone has a budget and I want to make sure like this fits for you. And if it doesn't, we shouldn't do it. But, you know, let me ask you, when people say it's too expensive, sometimes it means that they just don't have the budget, or they don't have the budget now, or, you know, maybe there was another solution that provides, you know, more value to you. You know, I want to make sure you're making the best decision. Like, when you say it's too expensive, can you explain a little bit more what you mean? Now, again, I'm not suggesting you go into that whole long narrative. I was just
doing that response. That's great
for show. But and in my book, I give a lot of examples about selling that are just from everyday life, not just, you know, from, let's say, B2B tech. But, you know, I'll say, let's say you go to the gym and you're there to see a personal trainer. And the personal trainer says, you know, so, hey, buddy, like, welcome to the gym. What can I help you with personal training? And maybe the reason you're there is because, let's say, your wife, in my case, let's say my wife doesn't, this is a fictitious story, doesn't find me desirable anymore. We've been married for many years. And for whatever reason, I suspect she doesn't find me desirable anymore. That's the reason I'm there. Mm-hmm. Now, the trainer says, you know, hey, it's going to be, it's going to be like $1,000 a month and you got to come 4 times a week. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really expensive. And it might be expensive, but maybe the root cause of that objection is I don't really want to tell him why I'm there in the first place. And I'm just very uncomfortable. And so think about what that trainer would have to do to pull that root cause out of me, because it's very sensitive. And oftentimes when people give us objections, they are rooted in kind of a very personal experience. It's not just that they don't have the money. There's all sorts of things behind it. So sometimes when you give like a bit of that pain menu, then it makes the other person feel more comfortable opening up and talking about what their concerns are.
I love that. One of the things that I find interesting about your work is that you equate great salespeople to great brands. And one of the things that great brands do is they don't necessarily chase customers, which is indicative of what great salespeople do, right? They don't chase customers. They attract great customers, which is super interesting to me. How do they do that?
Yeah. So this is a great point. You know, a lot of the best brands, they do something what I call leading with what they believe. You know, I'm pulling a little bit from the Simon Sinek, Start With Why. But the great brands lead with what they believe. They do not lead with like products and features and, you know, nuts and bolts. And so like you look at like a company like Apple makes great products, but you know that they stand for something more. They stand for innovation and they stand for like beautiful user-centric design and all these kinds of things because they care about those things. And so as a great example, when a new iPhone comes out, you don't need to do a lot of like, you know, web searches to find when it's coming out or the features or like... They certainly do a lot of advertising, but it's so pervasive in our society, like the release of the new iPhone, because of what it means, not because of, you know, what it is, they enjoy that market share. Tesla is another example.
Yeah, I love that. There's this theory in power dynamics called reverent power. And I find that this is sort of almost a mirror of that. I know there's some purists that would argue with me on this, but like when there's reverent power, it basically means you've developed a set of power dynamics that's based on a set of consistent values or something that you're consistent with that you're constantly displaying. And so when we see this in brands or we see this in negotiators or salespeople, we may not necessarily agree with all the same values, but we revere those brands. We revere those salespeople because they stick to this consistent set of values. They stick to this consistent set of beliefs, whatever it might be. And so they have this reverent power that exists. And so they attract people based on this reverent power that exists. And that's an amazing equation that you made between brands and salespeople, because a lot of salespeople don't think that they can do that, but they can as long as they're consistent with it.
Absolutely. And the companies that do this well are very easy to pick up. I mean, certainly a lot of them are kind of high-end or luxury brands, but a lot of them, you know, like if you look at like the Southwest Airlines or even, you know, like the Amazons, like people have affinity to these companies and they don't know why. But the other kind of side benefit of acting in this way and kind of leading with what you believe, and by the way, this isn't just a psychological principle. There's data to back this up. There's a report that's called the Edelman Trust Barometer that comes out every year or two. And they talk about kind of what people look for in trust in brands. And in 2018 and 19, the statistics say that more than 2/3 of buyers are what are called belief driven, meaning they make decisions about what they purchase based on the company's position on various societal and kind of larger scale issues, irrespective of the product. Amazing. But the side benefit is that if you align with your customers on that emotional level, you know, you're going to have a much deeper relationship. The sales cycles are going to go, you know, a lot quicker and you'll have a lot more brand loyalty. So, you know, leading with what you believe is important. The key is if you're in a position where you want to do that, but you haven't figured out what you believe, then you got to go through a bit of an exercise to put that out. But yeah, it's super important across so many different levels.
And I think this is important for a lot of young salespeople, young negotiators, young procurement people as well, is any kind of an organization that you're getting involved with, you've got to make sure that your beliefs are consistent with the company's beliefs as well, because that's going to seep through in any kind of interaction or negotiation that you have. If you're not on board with the organization and their belief structure, their values in a certain way, you're not going to be as successful as you would be at an organization where you do believe what they believe.
For sure. Well, you know, we're always on the lookout. I'm going to steal something from Simon Sinek here, but we're always on the lookout for people that believe what we believe. And he gives this great example of, you know, if you happen to be in, say, Paris, and you're, you know, in the Paris metro in the subway, and you're American, you're Canadian, you're a stranger in a strange land, and all of a sudden you hear someone speaking with like a North American accent, you know, behind you, you turn around, and you're like, oh, where are you from? And you're like, and it doesn't matter. They could be from Los Angeles, New York, Calgary, Vancouver. It's like, oh, I'm from Toronto. And you're best friends, right? Because when you're in these all these environments, you're looking for people that believe what you believe. So super important to put that out there.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, man, listen, as we close off, I always ask every guest that I've had on the show, what's the one thing that you want to leave the listeners with today?
The one thing I always talk about, and it all comes back to, is this, just this concept of feelings. Whether you are negotiating, whether you're in procurement, whether you're a sales or marketing person, like understanding that people are emotional creatures. And first and foremost, they, you know, I'm going to say buy in air quotes here, but they buy feelings. And that applies equally to how we sell, how we market, and how we negotiate, right? Like when we negotiate with people who we believe are on our side, have our best interests in mind, then the whole process goes a lot easier. The problem is that when we kind of degrade into thinking that we're dealing with kind of machines and nuts and bolts and features and functions, things start to fall apart. So that's the number one thing, is just sales, marketing, negotiation is all about feelings at the end of the day. And attuning yourself to those feelings is what's going to make you ultimately successful.
Yeah, 100% agree. If you can manage the emotion of the counterparty, it's going to be a significantly easier sales for you in the long run. Mm-hmm. Where do people find your book and where do people find you online?
Yeah, so the book is called Sell the Way You Buy, A Modern Approach to Sales That Actually Works Even on You. But you can just look up Sell the Way You Buy wherever you buy books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Indigo. And the website is called CerebralSelling.com. That's my business. And I actually give away a ton of stuff for free. So tons of content on my website, as well as my YouTube channel, which is Cerebral Selling as well. So just go to CerebralSelling.com and you can find everything there.
Amazing, man. Listen, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. For the listeners, highly recommend that you check out the book. Highly recommend that you check out David's stuff. David, thank you again, man.
Pleasure, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.